Okay. Good morning, everybody. And as we say every week, we'll have to give everyone the Yasher Koyach for coming so that we begin our week with Limud HaTorah. Today's shiur is based, obviously the overall topic of today's shiur is based on the beginning of Parshas Behar, which we read yesterday. In the Parshas Behar, the Torah begins by discussing the remarkable mitzvah of Shemitah, which we just finished. As we all know, the year 2008 was Tavshin Samaches, was a Shemitah year in Eretz Yisrael. And the mitzvah of Shemitah, as we know, is that the farmers have to allow their field to go unworked, and that's for the entire year of the Shemitah. And the mitzvah really reflects a tremendous bitachon, and it reflects the bitachon not just in the fact that Hashem will take care of people in such a situation, but it really speaks to the fact that the whole relationship between Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael is not the same way that every other nationality relates to their homeland. And that is, like the Netziv, which we'll speak about later, the Netziv says that the relationship between Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael is metaphysical. Metaphysical means that it's not just a question of practical and how things work, but rather it's all based on Siyata D'Shmaya, that the benefits that we get from Eretz Yisrael are really dependent very much on the relationship that Klal Yisrael has with Hashem. And therefore, if we observe, if we invest the bitachon in observing the mitzvah of Shemitah, so we are told that this will be for the good of the Klal Yisrael. In fact, we know, the Chazal tell us, that the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash took place because of the fact that they did not observe Shemitah properly. You had this even in the parasha, the second parasha that we read yesterday, Parashas B'chukosai, where pretty much the psukim speak to the fact that if you don't observe Shemitah, bad things will happen. Okay, so with that in mind, we come to the topic of today. The topic is the idea of an idea that was put forth in the more recent period of Jewish history, and that is to sell the land in Eretz Yisrael to Goyim in order that the laws of Shemitah should not be, that you should not have to deal in order to avoid with the laws of Shemitah. To sell Eretz Yisrael, to sell the land, the farmlands in Eretz Yisrael to Goyim in order that you should be able to work the fields during Shemitah. And this is what's widely known as the Heter Mechira. The Heter Mechira, just to give a little background, the Heter Mechira came into play for the first time in the year 1888. Because we know that in the 1880s there was a tremendous aliyah, there was a very strong movement of Jews in Eastern Europe who came back to Eretz Yisrael. You had many pogroms in Russia in the early 1880s, which convinced many people that there was absolutely no future for them there, and they began to move to Eretz Yisrael. And at the time, the land in Eretz Yisrael, there was not a tremendous amount of established economy, there wasn't a lot of commerce there. And the plan, in order for them to be able to provide for their needs, was for them to become farmers. Everybody, when the agriculture became a very, very big industry, we know that it was supported very largely by Baron Rothschild, who bankrolled it, and he even gave them from his prize vineyards, he gave them some saplings that they could replant in Eretz Yisrael. We know that the Carmel Wine Company, which exists to this day, was founded at that time. That's what it came from. It's because he lived in France and he had his own vineyards there, and he gave from his vineyards to the Olim, to the people who were going to Eretz Yisrael, that they should be able to have Parnassus. And sure enough, they planted and they developed the land, and it met with success. It wasn't easy, but it met with a good measure of success. And they even were able, they managed in a very short period of time to get to the point that they could export produce. It wasn't just the question of that they had food for themselves or they had food to sell, that produce to sell to the Arabs, but also they were exporting it. So all was fine and well until it came to the year 1888. The year 1888 was a Shemitah year, And now the question was, what do we do? They were not established enough. The feeling of the farmers and the feeling of a number of people who were there was that if they just let the land go for a year, that everything that they had put into it could be ruined, and that potentially this could wipe out everything that they had accomplished within the previous number of years. So at that time, the question was posed by the farmers, is there a way that we could deal with this? Is there something we could do? Is the Shas HaDchak? This is a situation of great, great need. It's a great situation of extenuating circumstances. So can we find a legal loophole to manage to continue to work the field during the Shemitah year of 1888? And somebody, it's unclear exactly who the first person who thought of this was, but the idea was suggested that why don't we do similar to Mechiras Chametz? The same way when it comes to Pesach and a person has a large supply of Chametz, so how do we deal with it? It's going to be a very big loss for the person to get rid of all their Chametz, so we sell it to a guy. So the idea was posed that maybe we should go ahead and sell the land in Eretz Yisrael to the guy. Let's find a guy who will buy the land, and by doing that, presumably, it will now become mutter to work the fields for the Shemitah year. Now, just at first glance, we have to recognize it's not really the same thing because of the fact that the issue with chametz is simply having the chametz in your possession. So if you sell the chametz is not in your possession anymore. Here, the question, the idea of selling the land to goyim was predicated on a belief, which we will discuss, that if you sell it to a guy, the halacha changes. Because one might say that, so what if you're going to sell it to a guy? But it's still land in Eretz Yisrael. A Jew is not allowed to work land in Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't matter who owns it. So here, the idea of the heter mechira was predicated on the belief that if you sell it to a guy, the halacha will change. So this was the idea that was put forth. And the shaila was sent to two places. The shaila was sent to Eastern Europe, where you had the Gedolei HaPoskim at that time, and the Shaila was also sent to Yerushalayim, where they had in Yerushalayim at that time, they had two very great Rabbanim. They had Rabbi Yishuv Leib Diskin and Rabbi Shmuel Salant, who were the head Rabbanim in Yerushalayim. In Europe, the Shaila was sent to the person who was widely considered the Gadol HaDor at that time, was the famous Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector. And the answers that they got, it wasn't just Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, he had other people with him, but basically the answers they got two different answers. The Rabbanim in Yerushalayim said, no way, you can't do it. Whereas they got a letter back from Europe that said, signed by Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan amongst others, who said that they felt that under certain specific circumstances, they were able to do it in this situation because of the fact that it was very, very extenuating circumstances, because of the fact that there was a tremendous loss, a potential tremendous loss. So therefore, they were given permission to sell the land for the Shemitah of 1888. And this is where, based on that psak, the farmers obviously were looking for the heter, which they received. They received the heter from the person who was considered the Gadol HaDor. And therefore, based on that, they sold the fields in 1888. And going fast-forwarding to our time, we know that this heter, which was given at that time, has been renewed by the Rabbanut in Eretz Yisrael every single Shemitah since, including the Shemitah that just ended a little while ago. So in the, I think it's 17 subsequent Shemitahs, every single time the Heter and Mechira has been renewed. Now, we all know that there is a great deal of controversy that surrounds it. For example, in our time, here in the United States, none of the major kashrus organizations recognize the heter mechira. For example, the OU, the OK, Starke, Chofke, all the hechsherim, right, do not respect that. They feel that this produce came from a Jewish farm that was sold. They would not give a hechsher to it. They feel that it would not be acceptable. So the question is, why not? Why is there others, on the other hand, just to be fair, I mean, that's what's done here. You go in Eretz Yisrael, there are two different schools of thought. There are those who are pro the Heter Mechira and those who are against the Heter Mechira. So what I would like to discuss a little bit today is, what are the issues? What are the issues? And it's kedai to know. I mean, I realize that, you know, for this past Shemitah, it's already too late. But on the other hand, you know, sometimes when you're out of the line of fire, you could consider it a little more open-mindedly. And therefore, let's see what's involved. Let's see why is it controversial? I mean, why is it different than Mechiras Chametz? Right, why is there opposition to this? And especially when the original heter was given by a person who was widely accepted as a tremendous gadol. So, in order to understand this, we have to realize that there are several issues. It's a very, very complicated thing, and the truth is, to go through every single point involved in the heter mechira would take hours, because it's a very complicated thing, and all the poskim on both sides went through meticulously through every single point. There were no less than, I think, 8 or 9 major points that had to be halachic issues that had to be taken into consideration. But I would like to discuss 2 of the main ones, and because, first of all, these are the main points, and second of all, because these are things that we don't necessarily know that it would be worth looking into. So the first issue that everybody brought up when they suggested the Heter Mechira was that, if this is such a good idea, how come we don't find it, how come no one did it until now? Right? In other words, if you could do this, and this is a way to get around it, so then the Klal Yisrael had a long history of observing Shemitah, right? Ever since the mitzvah of Shemitah began 14 years after they entered Eretz Yisrael. Like we mentioned last week, it took 14 years for the Klal Yisrael to be established in Eretz Yisrael. And once that happened, the mitzvah of Shemitah went into effect. The count went into effect. So 21 years after Yoshua led the Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael was the first Shemitah, and it continued ever since. So, yet we don't find clearly anyone speaking, that this, anyone coming out and saying that this is an avenue that you could explore. So the issues are as follows. The two major issues are, number one, the first major presumption of the Heter Mechira is that selling land to a guy would remove the Kedusha Shviz. Because we have to understand, what were they doing? How did the Heter Mechira play out? Right, they sold the land to an Arab, or to several Arabs. Farmers sold their land. It was subsequently the Rabbanim, actually, on behalf of the farmers, sold the land, which we will see later is also perhaps controversial. So the Rabbanim sold the land. And in effect, the belief was that now it does not, the law of Shemitah doesn't apply because it's owned by a guy, and therefore you could even have Jews working on the field. So the farmers, in effect, continued to work the field during the Shemitah year as if it was any other year. And the heter was because it's not our field. Once a guy owns it, the guy's ownership removes the kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. So, in order to approach this, we have to consider the following points. Number one, we have to consider, what is the status of Shemitah in our days? What is the status of Shemitah in our days? Obviously, we read yesterday that Shemitah is a mitzvah in the Torah. But the question is it still a mitzvah in the Torah today? And that could be the beginning of a heter. If it's not, that could be the beginning of a heter. And in reality, if one looks in the Rishonim, you will see that there are 3 opinions. There are those who hold that Shemitah applies even today, midaraisa. That is a minority opinion. The majority opinion hold that Shemitah applies today only midarabanan. And then there is a third opinion, a Das Yochid of Rabbeinu Zerachia, the Baal Amor, who says that Shemitah does not apply today, even Midrabanan. It's only a Midas Chasidus. It's only an act of piety. But essentially, the mitzvah of Shemitah does not apply at all today. Those are the three opinions. So you have the minority opinion, it's the Raisa, the majority opinion, it's the Rabbanan, and the Das Yochid opinion that it's only a Midas Chasidus. So now, what is this based on? So if you look at the sheet, we have the famous Gemara in Gittin, which speaks about the Heter, the Hillel came up. Another halacha in Shemitah, which created challenges for people, was the fact that the Shemitah year nullifies debts, that people who are owed money, the debts are canceled at the end of the Shemitah year. So we know the very famous enactment of Hillel was that because Hillel saw that in his time people refrained from lending out money because they were afraid that they wouldn't get it back as it got close to Shemitah and it was killing the commerce in Eretz Yisrael, so Hillel came up with the heter called Prusbel, which we have today. Now, what is the basis for the Prusbel? So the Gemara in Gittin, Daf Lamed Vav, discusses how could he do such a thing? If the Torah comes and says that the Shemitah year cancels the loan, so where does Hillel come to say that it doesn't? How could any rabbi go and say that I'll make an enactment which is against the law in the Torah? This is a question that the Gemara discusses. And in the course of the discussion, the Gemara says, about two-thirds of the way down the paragraph in the Gemara says, Amar Abaya, b'shvius b'zmana zeva rebihi, that this follows the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, the Tanya, Rabbi Omer, v'zed dvar ha-shmita shamot. We have the pasuk, which was not in yesterday's parasha, which says that this is the law of Shemitah Shamot, which means that you should refrain, you should desist from working the field and from collecting debts. So the Gemara makes a drasha, b'shnei shmitos hakosos medaber, that the Torah is referring to two shmitos in the same sentence, because it says zed dvar hashmita, and then the word shmita, which means to desist, to refrain, is once again repeated again, shamot. So the Gemara says that this means achas shmitas karka v'achas shmitas ksofim, which means bizman shata mishamet karka ata mishamet ksofim bizman shiata mishamet karka yata mishamet ksofim. Says the Gemara that this pasuk teaches us that the only time the law of the annulment of the debts takes place min haTorah is when the shmita of karka takes place min haTorah. And Hillel followed the opinion that the Shemitah of Karka did not take place midoraisa anymore. Why not? So Rashi explains, because of a different drasha, I don't want to get into the complexities of the drasha, but basically there is an opinion that says that Shemitah only applies min haTorah when the mitzvah of Yovel applies. Now, if you ever wondered how come today we don't have the mitzvah of Yovel, right? We read yesterday in the parasha also, right? The mitzvah of Yovel, that all the land in Eretz Yisrael goes back to its original owner, and all the slaves go free and all kinds of things, right? So and you can't work the field that year either. So how come we don't have Yovel today? So the answer is because the mitzvah of Yovel is predicated on most Jews living in Eretz Yisrael. It's only when most Jews live in Eretz Yisrael that we have the mitzvah of Yovel, and since that is still not the case today, we don't have Yovel anymore. Says many Rishonim, Rashi brings it here, that if there is no Yovel Midoraisa, there is no Shemitah Midoraisa either. And that is the opinion, as I say, of many people. Many people go by this, it's not so simple, it's a machlokas here in the Gemara, I'm not going to go through the whole Gemara, but the bottom line is that as a starting point for any heter, the first thing they're going to point to is that it's not Shemitah Doraisa. And as we know, if you recall, when we spoke about Mechiras Chametz, we said that if you're going to go ahead and make some sort of, you know, loophole sale, if you're going to make a sale of Chametz where you're really doing it just to beat the system, so we mentioned at that time that there were those who held that you could only do such a thing if it was Chametz Derabbanan, not if it was Chametz D'Oraisa, which is not what most people follow, but nonetheless, if you say that Shemitah is only midrabanan, that's step number one towards getting any sort of heter. Certainly, if you had the opinion of the Baal HaMor that Shemitah today is only a midas chasidus, then there would be no problem whatsoever. Because if that was the halacha, then okay, it's a midas chasidus. It's only an act of piety. If it's difficult, you don't have to do pious acts, right? But that opinion of the Baal HaMor is a das yachid. But the majority of Rishonim hold that Shemitah is only midrabanan, and if it's midrabanan, there may be a greater deal of degree of flexibility in terms of arranging such a sale. Okay. Now, having said that, so now that point was put forth by all the people who ever attempted any, if you ever read any literature on the Heter Mechira up until today, they will immediately make the declaration at the very beginning that they'll say, listen, Shemitah today is only Midrabanan. Everybody's going to have to say that. That's going to be step one. Now, the question is, even if that is so, But it's still midrabanan. It still has to be observed. The fact that it's midrabanan doesn't mean that therefore you can just blow it off and say it's too difficult, right? We have many chiyuvim that are midrabanan that we have to keep. There's no heter just to disregard the rabbanan. But now the question presents itself: can that help us in terms of understanding whether or not the ownership of a goy affects the land in Eretz Yisrael? And to this end, we have a controversial psak of the Rambam, which we have here on the sheet in the Hilchos Trumos Perek Aleph Halacha Yud. And it's controversial not because what the Rambam said itself is inherently controversial, but because there were two different ways that people had to read this Rambam. And this Rambam generated a tremendous degree of controversy in the 1500s, as we will see, and it continues to this day. And the Rambam states as follows. The Rambam says, Goy shekona karka be'eretz Yisrael. If a goy acquires land in Eretz Yisrael, lo hifkia min ha-mitzvahs. He says that does not remove the land from the mitzvahs. There are all the mitzvahs that apply to produce in Eretz Yisrael, Shemitah being one of them, Truma and Meister being one of them, right? All the mitzvahs that apply, says the Rambam, it does not remove it min ha-mitzvahs, el harei hi biktu shasa, but it remains in its sanctity. Okay, now, if you stop right here, we're finished, right? Because that's the Heter Mechira. If this is halacha, the Heter Mechira does not get off the ground. Because it says clearly that if a guy owns land in Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't change anything. So what's it going to help if you will take the land and sell it to an Arab? It still has the chiyuvim. See, even if you'll say, yeah, well, the Arab is not mechuyev in those mitzvahs, that's true. But that doesn't allow you to go ahead and work on his field during Shemitah. And not only that, if you bought produce from him, you would have to separate Truma and Meiser because of the fact that even though it grew by an Arab, okay, so the Arab has no chiyuv to take off Truma and Meiser, but a Jew does. So if the Rambam would have stopped right here, that would be the end. However, the Rambam did not stop there. And the Rambam wrote another line which generated a tremendous debate. And the Rambam said, Lefikach, therefore, im chazar Yisrael v'lakcha mimenu, if a Jew will then rebuy the land from an Arab, from the goy, eino kekibush yachid, this would not be considered a kibush yachid. Kibush yachid means that it would not be considered as if a private individual went and conquered land in Eretz Yisrael, in which case the halachas of Eretz Yisrael, kedushas Eretz Yisrael, would not apply. Ela mafrish trumas umaisris umevi bikurim. He would separate truma and maiser, and he would bring bikurim v'hakol min haTorah. And all of this is midaraisa, ki ilu lo nimkara lo goy me'olam, as if it was never sold to a goy. Says the Rambam, if you went ahead and rebought the land from the goy, so the halacha would be that now that you own it, in other words, presumably with the goy is obviously not going to bring bikurim, the goy is not going to separate truma ma'aser, he doesn't have those mitzvahs, there's no reason for him to, right? But if a Jew rebuys the land from the goy, so the Jew would have to do all of these mitzvahs. Now, come on the side of this, we have the commentary of the Kesef Mishnah. The Kesef Mishnah commentary was written by the Beis Yosef, who was the same person who wrote the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, the same person who wrote the Shulchan Aruch interpreted this Rambam as follows. He interpreted the Rambam to mean, now again, if you recall, the first line says that when a guy buys it, he doesn't remove the Kedusha. Okay? So that would seem to nullify any sort of Heta Mechira. Says the Kesef Mishnah, this is not true. When the Rambam said that a guy's ownership does not remove the Kedusha, what he meant by that was, it doesn't remove the Kedusha if a Jew then rebuys it. Meaning that so long as the guy owns it, it does remove the Kedusha. And therefore, when it's under the ownership of the guy, none of the mitzvahs of the agricultural mitzvahs of Eretz Yisrael, mitzvahs at Tlui Zbar, none of them apply. What the Rambam meant was, because there's a halacha that if a private person would go ahead and conquer a part of Eretz Yisrael which was under the domain of Goyim, so the halacha is that a kibush yochid, a private conquest, does not bring back the kedusha, would not make you have a chiyuv in the mitzvahs atzuliyus ba'aretz. So what the Rambam was saying was, you might think that if you sell it to a guy, it's as if the guy conquered that land in Eretz Yisrael, to the extent that if you went ahead and bought it back from him, it would be considered as if it was now a private conquest of Eretz Yisrael, in which case it would not have the mitzvahs. Says the Rambam, no, it doesn't mean that. In other words, so long as the guy has it, it's in limbo. In other words, when the guy has it, during the ownership of the guy, in fact, you put it from the mitzvahs. You put it from the mitzvahs. There would be no Truma Meister. There would be no Shemitah. It's only that ownership does not make it as if it was completely removed from Jewish hands, but rather it was like a temporary thing. And therefore, if Yisrael went ahead and bought it back from the guy, then it would reinstate the Kedusha that was there originally. So, according to this reading of the Rambam, which the truth is, after you hear it, when you read the Rambam, if you read this, the third and fourth line, it does sound like the Rambam is saying that. So according to the Beis Yosef's interpretation of the Rambam, it would come out that there would be a basis, there would at least be a structural plan for a Heta Mechira. Because it would come out that if you ask the Rambam, if you sell land in Eretz Yisrael to a guy, at the time that the guy owns it, does it have the Kedusha? So according to the Kesef Mishnah, the halacha, the Rambam would answer no. While the guy owns it, the Kedusha is removed. It's just only removed temporarily. So if Yisrael rebought it, it would be chayav again. But when the guy had it, it would be removed. And if that's so, there would be the beginnings of a possibility to construct a heter. Now, it happens to be that this Rambam is very, this Kesef Mishnah is very, very controversial, because at the time of Rav Yosef Karo, at the time that Rav Yosef Karo lived, there was another great Gadol who wrote, his name was, I believe, Rav Moshe Ditrani, was known, he became famous, he wrote Svarim under the title Mabit. Mabit, it was an abbreviation of his name, Moshe ben something Trani. And he was considered also one of the Gedolei Ador at that time. He was a contemporary of the Beis Yosef. And he writes very strongly in his tshuvas, he says that Chas v'Shalom, he says that's not what the Rambam is saying, and that because the first line of the Rambam, lo efkia min ha-mitzvahs, means very clearly, lo efkia min ha-mitzvahs. In other words, the Kesef Mishnah is saying that when the Rambam says, lo efkia min ha-mitzvahs, that it does not remove it from the mitzvahs, he means it doesn't remove it from the mitzvahs to the extent that if a Jew brought it back, it would still be chayiv. That's a little bit, you know, even though if you read it, if you heard the Beis Yosef say it, if you heard the Kesef Mishnah say it, and then you read the Rambam inside, you might think that's what the Rambam is saying. But the Mabit said very strongly, said, no, that's not what he means, that's Chadreit. The Rambam says, Harehi Biktushosa, he means even when it is owned by the guy, it's Biktushosa. This is what the Mabit said. Okay, now. So you have a machlokas, so that in itself, you'll say, all right, the Mabit was a very great man. Well, Maisa, the Kesef Mishnah, was written by the author of the Shulchan Aruch, whose opinion we hold to be on authoritative, right? More so than anyone else. His opinion carries the day. So certainly, if you were looking to create a heter, you could simply say that, all right, look, it's a machlokas, so we're relying on the Kesef Mishnah. There's no slouch. Certainly, right? The Kesef Mishnah is the person who we rely upon for everything else in our, so we'll rely on him here too. So interestingly enough, we have here an amazing thing that there's a controversy here which you don't find in too many other places. But there were contemporaries, there were people who lived at the same time of Rav Yosef Karo who were younger than him and who outlived him. Namely, there were two people. One of them was the author of the Sefer Shnei Luchos HaBris Shalah, Rav Yishaya Horowitz, and the other one was a Sephardic rabbi who wrote a Sefer called Sefer Charedim, who both knew the Beis Yosef, they both knew the author of the Kesef Mishnah, and they wrote in their Sfarim that they will testify that at the end of his life, Rabbi Yosef Karo changed his opinion on the reading of the Rambam. That Rabbi Yosef Karo, even though he wrote this in the Kesef Mishnah, but we don't find this in the Shulchan Aruch, there are no halachas of Shemitah in the Shulchan Aruch, so not many, so therefore they say that this opinion, you can't rely on this, because what he wrote in the Kesef Mishnah was a commentary on the Rambam, and that they know for a fact that he changed his mind. However, not everyone agrees with that. There is a sefer, only in halacha could you have this. And they point to the fact, incredibly, so the Chidah, who lived in the 18th century, who lived after, that there was not a contemporary of Yosef Karo, Yosef Karo passed away in the year 1575. So the Chidah, 200 years later, brought a tremendous proof that this cannot be so. Because Rabbi Yosef Karo's position that he writes here in the Kesef Mishnah, he also wrote in his Sefer of Shilas and Shuvas. It's not well known that in addition to writing the Beis Yosef, in addition to writing the Shulchan Aruch, in addition to writing the Kesef Mishnah commentary on the Rambam, Rabbi Yosef Karo also wrote a Sefer of Shilas and Shuvas, which is called Avkas Rochel. And there in that Sefer, I was able to dig it up last night, it's not on the sheet, but there he says, he reiterates his pshat in this Rambam, and the date on that tshuva corresponds to the English year 1574. So says the Chidah, if in 1574 he wrote a tshuva where he was still saying this, and he died in 1575, he didn't have a whole lot of time to change his opinion. Right, so the notion that you know, the fact is it's only hearsay. It's only, you know, that people are saying he changed his opinion, but how do you know? I mean, he didn't cross it out of the Kesef Mishnah. You'll say maybe the Kesef Mishnah was published already, but the fact of the matter is that what we have in front of us, he says this. So the Chidah says that in his belief it's not true, and therefore if Yosef Karo remained with this belief, more closer to our times, the Chazon Ish, the Chazon Ish of Rav Yishaya Karelitz, who lived until the late 1950s, who was very strongly against the Hetzer Mechira, writes in his Sefer that he says, who says the date on the tshuva is accurate? He says, what are you basing? He says, on the one hand, we have the testimony of two Edim. He says, you have two Edim. You have the Shalom and you have the author of the Sefer Charedim who say that Rabbi Yosef Karo changed his opinion. So what's your raya that it's not true? So 200 years later, somebody came and said, look at the date. He said, how do you know that the date is accurate? The Sefer wasn't published till much later. That's not, in his opinion, says the Chazon Ish, that's not enough to remove the testimony of other people. So therefore the Chazon Ish says he doesn't accept that, but the Chidah does accept that. Now this may sound a little petty, but there's a lot riding on this, because if Rabbi Yosef Karo changed his opinion, we're finished. Then there's no Hetzer Mechira, because that means that he would come out and say that at the end of the day, a goy's ownership of land does not remove the Kedusha. If that's true, then for a Jew to go ahead and work on the field that he sold to a goy would be a violation of the halacha, because nothing changed. So therefore, this question of whether Rabbi Yosef Karo stood by his pshat in the Kesef Mishnah or changed it is very, very central to the whole Hetzer Mechira. Now it happens to be, just for the record, that in Eretz Yisrael today, this machlokas plays out, because we know, anyone who is in Eretz Yisrael in any Shemitah year knows that produce that grows in the Shemitah year, let's say fruit that grows in the Shemitah year, so essentially you're allowed to eat. It has to be processed the right way, but essentially you could eat. But the halacha is that such fruit has the kedusha shviz. In other words, even though you're allowed to eat it, but it has kedusha. So therefore, if a person, let's say, had a plum that was from the Shemitah crop, okay, and he was eating it, and then halfway through eating the plum, he decides that I had enough of this, I'm going to throw it out. The halacha is you cannot throw it out. Why? Because the fruit itself is invested with Kedusha. See, even though you're allowed to eat it, but nevertheless, you have to eat it. If you're not going to eat it, well, let's say you had one that you decided, I don't like this one, I'm going to throw it in the garbage, you're not allowed to. And the halacha is, you have to wait until it rots on its own, but you can't be noig bizoyon with Kedusha Shvi'is. You can't treat it improperly. Now, this question of whether the guy's ownership affects that would have a bearing on this halacha, because, so what, let's say you don't rely on the Hetzer Mechira. So what are you going to do? So you'll go ahead and you'll buy a produce that was grown on Arab land in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, if it was for an export, there's no problem. But let's say it was grown in Eretz Yisrael on land that was legitimately owned by a guy. So now you have a question. I don't like this plum. I want to throw it in the garbage. So if you hold like the Kesef Mishnah, since it grew by a guy, therefore it has no Kedusha whatsoever, so you could throw it out. However, if you held like the Mabit, and like all the people who said that the Beis Yosef changed his opinion, and the Chazon Ish, it would come out that you would have to conduct yourself with the Kedusha Shvi'is, even with the fruit that came from Goyim. And therefore, this machlokas plays out today. If one would go to B'nai Brak with a strictly follow the rulings of the Chazon Ish, so there the custom is that even things that they get from non-Jews, they treat with the Kedusha Shvi'is. Whereas in other parts of the Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim, they conduct themselves according to the lenient opinion of the Beis Yosef. But the fact of the matter is that this shaila of whether or not the ownership of a goy changes the halacha obviously is going to be central to Hetzer Mechira. If the ruling of the Kesef Mishnah is negated, there's nothing to talk about. So therefore, that's number one. That's the first debatable point. That's the first issue which comes up with Hetzer Mechira. Okay, a second major point which comes up is a totally different issue, a very, very fascinating inyan in halacha, and that is this. We have in Maseches Avodah Zarah, there is a Mishnah, Daf Yud Tes Amud Beis, it's on the second sheet, the first side. The Mishnah Avodah Zarah speaks, as we know, the Maseches Avodah Zarah speaks the dinim that applied to the different things pertaining to Avodah Zarah. And on the second line, we have a halacha that Ein Mochin Lahem de Mechubar Lakarka. That you are not allowed to sell an idol worshiper anything that is attached to the ground. You cannot, in Eretz Yisrael, sell any property, anything that's attached to the ground, even produce which grows from the ground, you cannot sell when it's attached to the ground, you cannot sell it to an idol worshiper. That's a halacha. Why is this the halacha? So if you look at the Gemara, so the Gemara immediately will skip a little bit to the beginning of the Gemara. The Gemara says, Minani Mili, how do we know this? Amar of Yossi Bar Chanina, the Amar Kura, Lo Sichonem. Because we have a mitzvah in the Torah which is not so well known. It falls out in the summer, right? One of the summer parshas, which we don't generally pay as much attention to. So we have here in Parshas Veschanan on the first sheet, side B, we have Perek Zion, Pasuk Bey, Pasuk Gimel. So before the Jewish people were to enter into Eretz Yisrael, so Moshe Rabbeinu told them, listen, you're gonna have to deal with, you're gonna come into Eretz Yisrael, you're gonna be with all the idol worshippers, the seven nations, right? That it says in Pasuk Aleph here, the Shiva Goyim Rabin Vatsumim Mimcha, Mimecha. There are seven nations that you're going to encounter in Eretz Yisrael. So it says, Pasuk Beis, Unasonim Hashem Olakechol Afanecha V'hikisam, Hashem will give them over in your hands and you'll be able to conquer them. So the Pasuk says, Lo Sichlos Lahem Bris, you cannot make any covenants with these people, V'lo Sichonem. What does it mean, Lo Sichonem? The words Lo Sichonem mean, do not show them any favor. Do not be, so to speak, do not be kind to them. Lo Sichonem, do not be kind to them. What does it mean, Lo Sichonem? So Rashi here, it's really in the Gemara and Avodah Zarah that's on the page, but Rashi gives it over very briefly. Rashi says, Lo Siten Lahem Chein, that to these people you should not give it, you should not show them any favor, you should not be nice to them, to these seven nations, right? How so? To these idol worshippers. That you cannot compliment them, right? If you encountered such a person because of what they represent, you cannot go ahead and bestow compliments upon them. That's number one. Dabar acher, a second interpretation, lo sitein lahem chaniya ba'aretz. You cannot allow them to live in Eretz Yisrael. You cannot give them a place to live in Eretz Yisrael. This is what the Torah is saying over here. That Moshe told them, you're going to come into Eretz Yisrael, you're going to encounter the seven nations who inhabited Eretz Canaan at that time were steeped in idolatry. So Moshe said to them that when you deal with these people, you're going to conquer them, but you should just know, don't be nice to them. Don't be nice to them. Now, it just as an aside, in reality, we have to understand this because the halacha is that this means if they will not accept upon themselves the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. Right? We know the halacha is brought that when they conquered Eretz Yisrael, the Chazal say that Yoshua, before he went into Eretz Yisrael, sent letters to all the nations that inhabited Eretz Yisrael and said that if you will accept the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, we will not give you any problems. Right? We will not attack you. It's all, the issue was that if they're going to continue in their Avodah Zarah, if they're going to continue in their idolatry and they're going to continue in their other depraved lifestyle which they had, they were very cruel people and they were very immoral people. So that's where we have this Isser of Lo Sechanim. But Yeshua told them, and this is Halacha, that if you accept the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai, that's all you have to accept. The Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, no problem. But nevertheless, assuming they wouldn't, the Torah says Lo Sechanim, you can't give them land. You can't give them land. Now, if you look at the Tosis here on the top of the page, the Tosis on page 2, side 1, so Tosis says, Darish nami mahakra b'samach sholitin lem chen v'sholitin lem matnas chinam v'stama d'milsa mairi b'kulov de'kachavim. That even though the pasuk in the Torah is referring specifically to the seven nations, that the pasuk speaks out in Perek Zayin pasuk Aleph, Chiti, Girgashi, Amori, Kenani, Prizi, Chivi, Yavusi, that's seven, right? The seven specific nations, says Tosfos, in all likelihood, this applies to all idol worshippers. And therefore, it would come out that even though today we don't know from these nations, but the halacha would be that you could not sell an Oved Avodah Zarah land in Eretz Yisrael. And thus, a second challenge to the Hetzer Mechira came up, that how can you go ahead and attempt to sell the land to the Goyim in Eretz Yisrael? This is a violation of a Torah law of Lo Sechanim. And the reality is that the Netziv, that one of the great opponents to the original Hetzer Mechira, was the Netziv of Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of the famous Volozhny Yeshiva, who was a very big opponent, even though he was a member of the Chovevei Tzion movement, even though he was greatly in favor and encouraged people to make Aliyah, to move back to Eretz Yisrael. Nevertheless, he was very, very opposed to the Hetzer Mechira, and he writes there, he says, it's so ludicrous. He says, why are you trying to sell the land? Because you're worried about Shemitah. He says, Shemitah is an Issa D'Rabbanan. To sell the land to the Goyim is an Issa D'Oraisa. So, to use his expression, he said, it's like you're running away from a wolf and you're running towards a lion. He said, what are you accomplishing? In your great effort to not violate a rabbinic law, you're violating a Torah law. How could you do such a thing? It doesn't make any sense. And therefore, on this basis, the Netziv said that he doesn't understand how it's possible to have any sort of heter and mechira. Now, the answer that was given to this argument was made by a number of people. Netziv was the most outspoken, but a number of people made this argument. So the answer that was given was not given, I don't know if it was in print at that time, but it is in the writings, in the Shas Tshuvas by Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, the famous Rav Cook, who, although he was writing at a later point, but he says that we have it here on the third sheet, side A in the Sefer Mishpat Kohen. He says here on the second line, he says that this would not be a problem in his opinion, because he says v'lismoch the Yishmaelim she'enem ota avodazara ein yisra shalchaniya b'kaka. Says Rav Kook, he says, what's the problem? The problem is that you can't sell the land in Eretz Yisrael to an Oved Avodah Zarah. So Rav Kook said, Muslims are not of the Avodah Zarah. They're not. They're monotheistic, right? They believe essentially in the same God we believe in, right? In other words, Muhammad told them that, Muhammad led them astray by telling them that the Torah was batal. But the fact of the matter is, they're not of the Avodah Zarah, right? Right? The Christians are, but the Ishmaelim are not. So therefore, he said that what's the point? He says, look at what it says. You're not allowed to sell this land to people who are of the Avodah Zarah. Muslims are not of the Avodah Zarah. This was his argument. Now, in reality, this is a very complicated point because that alone, it's not so clear to just say that and assume that that's true. He based this on, there's a halacha in the Torah which was mentioned in the parasha yesterday called the Ger Toshav, which is that a guy who accepts upon himself the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, it seems that there are people who say that if a guy accepts upon himself the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, you're allowed to give them land in Eretz Yisrael. That the whole Isra of Lo Sechanim is only by an Ovid Avodah Zarah who holds by his beliefs. But if they will accept the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, it's different. Now, Islam, I don't know that much about it, but it seems from the writings of all the people who are in favor of the Hetzer Mechira, they say that officially they accept all the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. Right? The Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, which are the big three, right? The Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayos, Shfichas Damim, right? The three cardinal sins. Those are three of them, and then you have the prohibition of Eber Min Achai, not to eat from a living animal, and not to curse Hashem's name, and not to steal, and to establish courts of justice. Those are the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. Officially, that's part of their religion, right? Whether or not we see that playing out in front of our eyes is a different story, but the fact is that that's on the books. That's on the books. So, if you ever wondered who keeps the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai, where do we ever find someone who keeps the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach? I mean, you have people, you have like a sect of people called Noahides, but the fact is they claim that the Ishmaelim, that the Muslims keep the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach as a religion, as an institution, their institutionalized belief, their established beliefs, they subscribe to the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach. So therefore, Rav Kook and others said that the Isra of Lo Sechanim would not apply. Now, this point is very, very debatable, but you have to look very carefully into the halacha to see if this is so, because there are those who say that that's only to a person who officially attains the status of a Ger Toshav, which means that it's not just that privately they accept the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, but they have to stand in front of a Jewish court and pledge allegiance to the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, which no Muslim ever did, right? And then there's a question, b'chlal, whether that halacha applies today. There are people who say that the halacha of Ger Toshav only applies in the time with his Yovel, but this is what he said. This is what he said, and on this basis, he claimed that the problem of Lo Sechanim would not be a problem. So on the one hand, you have the Nesiv who screams that it's an Isidoraisa. On the other hand, you have Rav Kook who says that it's no problem whatsoever because these people fit the requirements. Now, there was another way that, now, as I say, that Rav Kook's approach, it seems, was not amongst the Matirim, amongst the original Matirim, the people who gave the heter. Rav Kook first came onto the scene in the early 1900s. In the early 1900s, I think the year for the Shemitah of, I think it was 1909, was the Shemitah year. I checked the math. 1888, 1909. Yeah, 1909 was 21 years later, was the Shemitah year. So at that time, this is what he said. If one looks, what were they saying about this back in 1888, before he came into the picture? So Rav Yitzchak Elchanan, who was one of the people who subscribed to the Hetzer Mechira originally, had a different way to get around the Isser of Lo Sechanim. And he said that the Isser of Lo Sechanim only applies if you're going to sell it to them permanently. But if you're going to make it only a temporary sale, so then there's no problem, because he said the whole concept of Lo Sechanim is that they shouldn't be permanently entrenched in Eretz Yisrael. But if you sell it, essentially it's just like a lease. In other words, I'm giving it to you for a short period of time and then you're gone. So the way they structured the Hetzer Mechira from the original until today is that the Hetzer Mechira says that the land is sold to the Arabs for a period of no more than 2 years. And the Rabbanut today is makbid that they will only sell it to a Muslim. In other words, even though theoretically there are other goyim in Eretz Yisrael, you could do the head, you know, just like mechiras chametz, you could do mechiras chametz with anybody as long as he's a goy. So, you know, rather than selling it to the wayward Arab, you know, like, you know, people who criticize the hetter mechira said, yeah, well, you're selling it to some barefoot Arab who's walking in the street, you're selling him the whole Eretz Yisrael. It's a joke, right? So you could go today and you say, well, why do I have to do that? I can go to very distinguished people. I could go to the diplomats. I could go to the Dutch ambassador to Israel and make a deal with him. The answer is that you couldn't do, because they will only sell it to a Muslim, and they will only sell it for a short period of time. In that way, they incorporate both heterim. They have Rav Yitzchok Chanan's pshat that Wolsuchanim is not a problem because it's a short-term deal, and Rav Kook's pshat that Wolsuchanim is not a problem because of the fact that it's only by an Ovid Avodah Zorah, and Muslims are not Ovid Avodah Zorah. This is how they got around it. Now, the fact is that on this point also, I know we're running out of time here, but on this point also, there was a tremendous amount of opposition, and again, in every generation, there were people where Rav Yitzchok Chanan's point was disputed, Rav Kook's point was hotly disputed, and even till today, we have in the Chazon Ish, the Chazon Ish writes that he says that where do you come to say your own pshat in the Torah? The Torah says, Wolsuchanim, and the Gemara says it means you can't sell it, and to start saying, well, they meant it for the Torah meant it for this reason and not for that reason, where do we have the right to do such a thing? So therefore, the Chazon Ish was very, very opposed to people making their own interpretations of the Torah, no matter how great they were. And his argument was that even if you'll say that great people did it previously, but that was because it was extremely extenuating circumstances. But the Chazon Ish said that you cannot do such a thing. Now, before we end, I just want to say that you might ask that on this point of Wolsuchanim, you'll say that even if Wolsuchanim is a problem. So in other words, we touched upon essentially two points. The first problem is, can a guy's ownership remove the Kiddush of Eretz Yisrael so that the Matirim will rely on the Kesef Mishnah and assume that he didn't change his opinion, which is what the Chidah said. Right? As far as the second point of Wolsuchanim, so that point, so you have here the debate, you have the heterim that Wolsuchanim might not apply in this situation. But if you think into it, you'll ask the following question. You'll say that even if Wolsuchanim is a problem, but what does that mean? That means it's prohibited to sell the land to a guy. But does that mean that if you did, the sale would be bottle, that the sale would be nullified? Presumably, if you went ahead and sold the land, it would be a valid sale. In other words, if it was done according to the dictates of the Choshen Mishpat, it's a legal transaction. I sold the land to a guy. Now, I may have violated a law in the Torah by doing so, but nonetheless, the land belongs to a guy, so it should be mutter anyway. So one might ask that even if the opponents of, even if the people who take Wolsuchanim literally will stand by what they said and say that you're not allowed to sell it even to an Arab, but the fact is, good, so that's the avera of whoever did it. But how does that affect me? If I want to go to the store and buy from the Hetzer Mechira, the fact is that it was sold. It was sold. Good. The rabbi who sold it didn't have avera. He didn't have avera. He was over Wolsuchanim. But it was a legal transaction. It was a legal transaction. So if it's a legal transaction, and that transaction in turn makes it the property of the Arab, which in turn removes the Kedusha, what's the problem? So to this, the Chazon Ish said a remarkable thing. The Chazon Ish said that if Wolsuchanim is a problem, then the whole sale is null and void. Why? Because we have a klal in halacha, ein shliach l'dvar avera. Ein shliach l'dvar avera means that even though we know in the Torah there are many things that could be done through an agent, right, that many dinim that a person doesn't have to do himself, he could do through an agent. Mechiras chametz, right, we have a situation of a mechira which is done through a shliach, right, the rabbi sells the chametz, nobody sells their own chametz, we all go to the rabbi arranges for the mechiras chametz. So says the but the halach is, the Gemara says that the laws of agency, the laws of shlichus, do not apply when you're doing an avera. So therefore, said the Chazon Ish, it comes out if in fact Wolsuchanim means it's osur min haTorah to sell the land to the goyim. So then it comes out that now who's selling the land? The farmers are not selling the land. The farmers are authorizing the rabbis to sell the land. So that means that the land is being sold to the rabbis who sold it, who did the Hetzer Mechira, didn't own any real estate, right? They were just doing the rabbinic angle. So that means that they're acting as a shliach. The rabbi is acting as a shliach for the landowner, says the Chazanish, ain't shliach with Vayavara. And which means that there is no agency in such a case, which means that the whole sale is void, because it has to be sold by the owner. If somebody, some other person can't sell my house, right? If I authorize him to, he can, but only I or my shliach could do it. So therefore, if you go to, if it's an avera to sell it to a guy, and therefore the Jewish landowner authorizes a rabbi to sell it, the rabbi is not an authorized shliach, and therefore would be ein shliach l'dvar avera. And therefore, for these reasons that we've been saying all along, the Chazon Ish was amongst many was amongst the opinion that the Hetzer Mechira, he said, had no validity, because he said that after everything said and done, this point you can't get around. He said Los Chanaim, he did not accept the interpretations of Yitzhak Chanan or of Cook, and he said that being the case, it's an aver. If it's an aver, there's no shlichus. It's a tremendous problem. The other side, those in favor of the Hetzer Mechira responded to the Chazon Ish. We find this in the Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank, the Rav Yerushalayim, other people wrote that the law of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera does not apply. They based this on a Tosus, I think it's actually even a Gemara in Maseches Kedushin, that says that Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera would not apply if the Mishaleach, if the person who made the Shliach, did not know it was an Avera. Excuse me. If the shliach did not know it was an avera, because he says that the whole reason for ein shliach l'dvar avera is because the shliach should not have listened to the person who sent him. He should have listened to God. Right? God says he can't do this. So just because somebody else is telling you to do it, divrei harav, divrei talmid, divrei mishomen, right? You should not be listening to that person. You should be listening to Hashem. So the people who argued with the Chazon Ish said that svara would not apply if the person who was the shliach did not know that it was wrong. Because if he didn't know that it was wrong, then you can't say you should have listened to Hashem. I think I am listening to Hashem. I didn't know this was usur. And certainly in a situation where they held that it was mutter, it wasn't that it was a shogeg. They held it was mutter because they held lo sechanein means like Rav Yitzchak Chanan said, or like Rav Kook said. So therefore, on that basis, it would come out that there would be a shliach. So that being the case, they argued with the Chazon Ish's contention that the Mechira would be void. So these are just a couple of the issues. In reality, there are several more points that get involved, and the whole question of is the Mechira really serious? They bring up the fact that the Mechira is not registered in the official books, it doesn't go into the official land registry, it never did, and therefore it's like a sham, it's like a harama. So a lot, in a nutshell, just to end off, in a nutshell it comes out that the people who were Megil, the people who created the Heter, it's very clear were relying on a lot of things. They were relying on the Kesef Mishnah's Pshat and the Rambam, they were relying on the liberal interpretation of Lo Sechonim, they were relying on the explanation of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera, they were relying on the fact that Shemitah is only Midah Rabbanan, and therefore they said that you could be a little more lenient, you could rely on you know, you could take lenient opinions if it's only an Issa D'Rabbanan. So this was the controversy started back in the day in 1888 and continues to our time. The issue why today it meets probably with the greatest opposition is because in our time an amazing statistic which I saw over the weekend, which people probably don't know, is that as of a few years ago, exports produce only constituted 3% of the exports in Israel. In other words, the whole export industry in Eretz Yisrael, only 3% is produce. Most of what they export is technology and a lot of other things. So therefore, the argument is made today that since the original Heter, there's no question that Rav Yitzchak Chanan gave the Heter because it was a shot of chak. People told him that they're going to starve, that the whole yeshiva is going to collapse if they don't have a Heter Mechira. So the argument today is, the reason, getting back to our original point, why don't the American Kashrus agents agencies recognize this, because they say that since the original heter was only issued under extreme duress, and there are so many halakhic complications involved, so today we should go back to keeping Shemitah. Even Rav Kook wrote in one of his tshuvas, which I don't have here on the sheet, but he writes in one of his tshuvas, he says that, Chas v'Shalom, I'm not suggesting that we should stop keeping Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael, I'm just saying it because of the fact that in our time, if we keep the Shemitah, it's going to lead to a churban. He writes that. He says it's going to be a churban if we keep the Shemitah. So we are up against the wall. So, as far as today is concerned, where the very good case can be made that things have changed, and that therefore they're not so reliant on that, and even though it would involve a certain hardship, but okay, that's the mitzvah of Shemitah. And as we said at the outset, the mitzvah of Shemitah is based on the fact that Jewish survival in Eretz Yisrael relies on B'tachon Hashem. So therefore today, as a general rule, many, many people do not go in favor of the Hetzer Mechira. However, those that do rely upon some of the points that we mentioned.